A son of a hat.
So one's getting close to graduating from high school.
This year.
Portland. Yeah, but that's the same time as the US Conference of Mayors in Miami. June 20th to 24th.
Got your son done?
Miami. I'll be in Miami. I think so.
I went to combine last week.
Although I do love Portland.
Really?
It's really pretty. Really, really pretty.
But I wasn't home watching TV.
Yeah, I guess not.
Science and sustainability. Gosh, that was so nice.
And that really makes.
Oh, uh-huh. Oh, really, yeah.
I know, I'm trying to figure out how to even do the Miami.
Sometime.
So.
Yeah, really.
Just gonna be getting back and turn around. Well, we're going with three other couples. Four couples. Planned it for over a year, so we're all going, even though the dollars were never on that. Talk about how many baguettes can be eaten a week. Yeah.
I did, you know, I'm playing the.
I'm gonna get going so we can get out of here.
Absolutely. So, the quorum did the bag shake. Shake them out.
The one.
Vanessa, you know,
they gave it to everybody. I don't know if it came to everybody, if it came to me, because I don't know. But I don't want it. I don't care less. San Francisco, I care less about San Francisco. As long as I stay out of my place. Who's my private chair?
Miss Tardia. How are you?
Yourself?
Just plucky.
Plucky or dead?
Oh, 9.5 months. You guys have recycled. I have my advent calendar.
Are you getting some
Are you using a special? Mary's got quite a bit.
Well, good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Board of Directors meeting for the Bay Area Air Quality Management District for Wednesday, March 19th. If we could have a roll call, please, Vanessa.
On the roll for the Board of Directors meeting of Wednesday, March the 19th, Director Bates, Director Brown, Director Daly, Director Dunnigan, Director Garner, Director Joya, Director Haggerty,
here.
Director Kishimoto,
here.
Director Platt,
here.
Director Nist, Director Lockhart.
Here.
Director McGolrich. Director Miley. Director Ross.
Here.
Director Szymanski.
Here.
Director Silva.
Here.
Director Smith.
Here.
Director Torliak.
Here.
Director Okama.
Here.
Director Wagenknecht.
Here.
Director Yeager.
Here.
And Chairperson Hill.
Here.
We have 14 members present. We do have a quorum.
Thank you, Vanessa. Now, will you all please rise and join Director Szymanski as he leads us in the pledge to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Director Szymanski.
I was scared to death not to say it the way you wanted.
We will move now to the public comment period. This is an opportunity for anyone in the audience to speak to an item that is not on our agenda today. Seeing no one, we'll go right to the consent calendar, items 1 through 5.
Second.
We have a motion from Director Szymanski, second from Director Smith on the consent calendar. Is there any opposition to that motion? Seeing none, it's approved without opposition. And now we will move to item number 6, committee reports, Climate Protection Committee. Vice Chair Torliat.
Thank you. The committee met on Thursday, March 13, 2008. The committee received a report from staff on the proposed greenhouse gas fee schedule to address costs incurred by the Air District to implement climate protection activities for stationary sources. Three members of the public commented on the item, expressing concern with the Air District authority and duplication of efforts at the state and regional levels. The committee provided direction to staff to move forward with the fee schedule on exclusion of biogenic CO2 emissions. I would also add to that Mr. Bunger gave a very detailed response regarding the issues associated with Air District authority and was very clear that the district did have authority in this area. The committee received an update from staff on Air District activities to support local government with climate protection efforts that included the Air District's Climate Protection Grant Program, inventory assistance, workshops, regional and state partnerships, planning assistance, and CEQA guidance and support. Staff also presented to the committee a brief overview of the California Air Pollution Control Officers Association CEQA and Climate Change White Paper. The paper presents threshold options, tools for impact quantification, and presents a list of mitigation measures. The committee deferred agenda item number 6, greenhouse gas emission reductions from the Bay Area Stationary Sources Phase 2 report, to the next meeting of the committee. The next meeting of the committee is at the call of the chair, and I move that the board of directors approve the report of the Climate Protection Committee.
Second. Thank you, Vice Chair Torliat, and a second by Director Kishimoto. Is there any opposition to the motion? Hearing none, the motion is passed without opposition. A report of the Stationary Source Committee, Director Haggerty.
Thank you. I guess I'm filling in for Chair Daly today. I'm going to give a shot at reading this, Mr. Chair, although I do not have my glasses, so it's a little hard to see this morning. The Stationary Source Committee met on Monday, March 17, 2008. The committee received reports on the following three informational items. The first one, the status report on the proposed Regulation 6, Rule 3, wood-burning devices. The report included background information on wood smoke and winter PM 2.5, a breakdown of wood smoke distribution, barrier wood smoke inventory, a summary of comments received at public workshops, proposed changes to the draft rule, next steps in the rule process, and information on outreach meetings to be held in April. The committee discussed that proposed rule does not allow any indoor or outdoor residential burning when the Air District forecasts an exceedance of the National Ambient Air Quality Standard for fine particulate matter, including EPA certified wood burning devices and pellet stoves. In order to provide a clear air quality message to the public and obtain the maximum emissions reduction possible, five members from the public commented in support of the proposed rule, and one member of the public was neutral. Number two, the proposed amendments to Regulation 9, Rule 7, NOx and CO from industrial, institutional, and commercial boilers, steam generators, and process heaters. The report included background information on Regulation 9, Rule 7, which was last amended in 1993, proposed amendments to the rule to reduce NOx limits to reflect current control technology and extend NOx limits to devices below 10 million BTU per hour, proposed energy efficiency requirements, and the next steps in the rule process. A second public workshop is scheduled for early April, and a public hearing is expected in the third quarter. Number three, proposed amendments to Regulation 8, Rule 20, graphic arcs printing and coding operation. The report included an overview of printing technologies currently regulated, printing operations in the Bay Area, VOC emissions from permitted printing sources, proposed amendments to the draft rule, including anticipated emission reductions, and the next steps in the rule process. A workshop on the proposed amendments is expected in the spring, and the public hearing to consider proposed amendments to the rule is expected third quarter of 2008. The committee provided direction to the staff on items discussed during each presentation. The next committee will be at the call of the chair. I move the board of directors approve the report of the Stationary Source Committee.
Thank you, Director Haggerty, and a second by Director Szymanski. Is there any opposition to the motion? Hearing none, the motion is passed without opposition. Thank you. Moving to other business, report of the executive officer. Mr. Broadbent, good morning.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, good morning. I have just a couple of items, but they are of significance that I thought I could provide you this information through a series of slides, that copies of which are in front of you. First, let me talk to you a little bit about the fact that EPA just recently announced a revision to the 8-hour national ozone standard. And I wanted to talk to you a little bit about that, is how it will affect the Bay Area and the Bay Area District. On March 12th, EPA revised the 8-hour, they announced they're going to be revising the 8-hour national ozone standard. The standard would be reduced from what it is today at 84 parts per billion down to 75. This is based on a series of recommendations by their advisory panel and a variety of input that was received by EPA. There's a great deal of controversy surrounding that, but nevertheless, this EPA under this administration has decided to revise it down to 75. The staff has taken a look at those days in which we would be exceeding the standard, look back actually several years. What this new standard essentially means is that we'd be exceeding the standard about twice as many days per year as we do now. Have the next slide, Vanessa. EPA has yet to publish the revised standard, but we anticipate that to occur here shortly. What this will mean is that essentially the EPA will go through the process of designating which areas of the country are in attainment and which are in non-attainment. Those designations will occur by March of 2010, and then subsequent areas that are found to be non-attainment will need to file plans. Those will be due by 2013, and specific implementation requirements for what's to be contained in the plans and designations, what will be required of different regions, all will be contained in a separate rulemaking. So what this is essentially meaning that based on the latest epidemiological information, EPA is basically coming to the conclusion that the current standard isn't health protective, isn't sufficiently health protective, and indeed they're lowering the standard. When this has occurred in the past, it has been exceedingly difficult to kind of explain this to the public because it looks like the air's gotten worse when in fact what's happened is the standard has just been lowered. So that'll be something that the staff works very diligently to explain to the public. As we look back on the last several years, this chart here shows you what it has meant. Last year we had one exceedance of the 8-hour standard in 2007, what it means if the standard was established at 75 parts per billion, we'd see two. And so just kind of shows you back as we look back at the last several years. You'll recall the summer of 2006 was a rather bleak year. We had the end of June, early July, we had a whole series of days in which we had very hot temperatures, and we saw as many as 12 days of violation of the national standard. And that, looking back at that same data, we exceeded it at least 17 times. So it has some implications for us with regard to our Spirit of the Air program. Clearly, certainly what we'll need to do as staff is continue to relook at all how we can get additional reductions in terms of VOC and NOx. We, of course, have been on that path for several years to try to meet the state standards that you see off to the right here. We need to continue to make progress towards those state standards. And all this is doing is causing that reinforcement and push on us, if you will, to continue to take a look at how we can get additional reductions. And so I won't necessarily cover this chart. This chart just starts to show you in terms of attaining the standard, looking at essentially, the attainment of the standard is a statistical exercise looking at the fourth highest over a three-year period. What I'll do, Mr. Chairman, if you'd like, I can either pause here or I can also talk about the West Oakland health risk assessment.
I think we have questions at this point.
Jack, two questions. In other states in the United States, are there standards for the 8-hour state standard the same or around the same as ours is with the 70? Mm. because what I'm trying to figure out is the federal government imposing a stricter standard on many of the other states than they would normally have, as opposed to us, because we have stricter state standards than the federal government?
Well, we as staff can go back, Director Torliat, and look at all the different states as to whether they've established their own separate standards. In California, we do have more stringent ambient air quality standards, as the previous slide, Vanessa, shows. And indeed, the way the state standards are established, that you need to be able to make progress towards meeting those standards. There's not as many penalties or implications to not meeting those standards, right? But clearly, California does have some stricter ambient air quality standards. We can go back and look to see which other states might have stricter standards, but I can tell you most states rely strictly on the federal ambient air quality standards. That's almost 40 or maybe even 45 of those states probably just have
really?
Federal ambient air quality standards.
Okay, so it's probably more significant for those states as opposed to us, because we've been trying to achieve a goal that's been at 70 opposed to the 75 necessarily. Okay, and then the other question I have is, we're supposed to be actually revising or updating, I'm not sure exactly what the terminology is, our ozone attainment plan. It's already been due, mm-hmm. I believe. So what does this timeline do for that? How are we going to address that? Are you going to be coming back to us with how we're going to proceed? Because you were, I guess, waiting
right.
for a little bit.
California Clean Air Act requires that we update our plan every 3 years. And so that updating process is due, and we're looking at being able to undertake that effort for next year. So we think, though, as staff, just to give you a heads up, we think it makes sense to probably pull all the pollutants under one plan, ozone, PM, if you will, only because NOx and other pollutants contribute to both problems. And so it might make sense for us to have a comprehensive strategy update for 2009. We as staff are still trying to take a look at whether that makes sense and lay out a timeline. We were going to brief the executive committee on that, actually, at its next meeting. But it will not be a federal plan. That update will be strictly to be able to show progress towards meeting the state plan. The federal SIP, we're going to wait to see what will be the federal requirements for that SIP, because they change, and EPA will have a different set of requirements for us to meet in terms of that federal SIP. It's also got a whole set of implications. When you develop and adopt a federal SIP and you submit it on to EPA, it's got a lot of implications for the district as to, in terms of legal requirements and in terms of whether you could potentially get sued if you don't meet the specific deadlines. And so I think we'll wait to see what EPA requires of us and develop that plan subsequent to the implementation rule coming out by EPA. Did you want to add?
The only thing, we are not currently under a federal planning obligation. We submitted our last federal plan, and that one met the requirements. And so at this point, we have no federal planning obligation. We will when this new rule comes out, but it won't be, as I think the slide showed, something like that.
Okay. Thank you.
Director Ross.
Yeah, Jack, on the 75.0, just like it was 80, but really it was 84. So is it 75 or 75.0, and it's really 79, or is it really 75 for averaging? Purposes?
Yes, Director Ross, you might be thinking of when we call a Spare the Air Day, right? That's, we typically have provided us a little bit of a margin for us as to when we'll call a Spare the Air Day. But this standard is indeed 75 ppb. That's the new. That will be what is, at least we believe, EPA is going to be proposing. There was a great deal of controversy as to whether it should be 70 ppb, but EPA ultimately decided to choose 75.
So when we look to go to Spare the Air Days, we're going to be looking at 75.
We'll probably take a look at and try to develop a margin of safety. And if I can ask your indulgence, we'll come back to you as to what that margin of safety will be.
Thank you. We'll call
Director Kishimoto.
Thank you. I mean, as you noted, there was a lot of press about whether it should be reduced to 70. So my question is there any plan for the state to reduce their threshold? And when was this set? And is it based on the latest data?
The Director Kishimoto, the 70 PPP? By the state?
Yes, for the state. Because the state seems to kind of stay ahead of the federal.
Do you remember when they revised their time?
That was about
2 years ago.
2 years ago, okay.
Is
the state threshold kind of more of a stretch goal rather than?
No, they actually established their own ambient air quality standard. They believe that is a bright line they would define as being to be health protective. Mm. It's based on their own review of the epidemiological information, health information. EPA prides itself on not necessarily following just the federal government, but establishes its own standard. We, of course, have an obligation to try to continue to make progress towards that 70 PPB, and that's indeed what we indicated to the press when they asked whether they should have established 70 or 75. We indicated that we felt like the state of California, that it should have probably been set at 70 PPB when EPA revised the standard.
Thank you. Any further questions? Jack, then I guess we'll move on to
your next item. I wanted to highlight also an important development that's occurred for the board. CARB has been working with us very closely on a set of health risk assessments. And Vanessa, I'll just, the health risk assessments, there's actually three complementary portions of this health risk assessment focused in on the West Oakland community. And specifically, they've been looking at this, focusing in on the relative concentration and impacts that diesel PM provides in this community. The health risk assessments are about to be released. Actually, there is a community meeting tonight where CARB and ourselves are going to be communicating to the public about what these findings are, what is the assessment beginning to show. It is based on emissions in 2005. That's for all the different sources listed here, including trucks, ships, harbor craft. We think that that's probably about as close as you're going to get to what we think the emissions are today. And as I mentioned, there are actually three separate parts to this health risk assessment. There's one that's for the port, one that's for the rail yard, the UP rail yard, that is somewhat in the middle, if you will, the different colors. And finally, there's one that's looking at just what is the relative health risk impact in the adjacent community of West Oakland. Vanessa? The estimates that they are developing look like it's based on a potential lifetime cancer risk and other health impacts. They look at both cancer risk as well as non-cancer risks. And as I mentioned, it'll be presented tonight. So let me just give you a little bit of a heads up of what they're showing. So you'll have a...
Chair Hill, could I ask one question?
Sure.
Who is it who is putting this out? What is the...
Director Ness, this is the California Resources Board. The state has been developing this. Spending most of the resources have been really been by the state, but we've been working with them very closely. So staff of this organization, along with the state, have been preparing this health risk assessment, and tonight is when it gets released.
So it's CARB releasing it?
Mm-hmm. Right. CARB has been the one that's been doing most of the work, but we've been providing input in terms of emissions estimates and looking at their preliminary findings. And
CARB is the lead agency.
So I would tell you that the CARB is the lead agency.
CARB is the lead agency working with any of the health agencies or not?
They've been working with the Port of Oakland, working with the County of Health Department of Alameda. So there's been a great deal of input.
I don't recall a meeting like this before that talked directly about health risk assessment. Has there been one that I don't
This has been ongoing. Unfortunately, it is probably a year overdue, or probably a year and a half overdue, I would tell you, not to be critical of the California Resources Board, but they
would be.
They have had a number of competing priorities, and so they ultimately decided to get it done. I think, frankly, your chair has a lot to do with why this is getting done now. And
thank you, Jerry.
So it is just about to be released, so I thought I'd give the board, if you all don't mind, a heads up of what this assessment's going to be indicating.
Extraordinary numbers.
So this way you don't necessarily read about
so,
it in the newspaper.
So it is the very first time.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
For this one.
There are the about the railroad MOU risk assessments.
Right, but I'm talking about this precisely because
correct.
I don't recall this before, okay. So this is a
that's correct. This is the first time.
Yeah, it's all of California.
I just wondered, for us, it is the first dealing with the Port of Oakland, correct?
Correct.
Tim?
Once this is released, are they going to, will you be able to put this on the net or something where we can look at it?
Yes, we can put it on our website. I guess.
Moto, did you have a quick question? I didn't. Sorry, my fault.
I can give you the bottom line, what the most important finding is, if you'd like. What basically this health risk assessment is showing is that that there is an elevated risk in and around the West Oakland community, that the cancer risk is about three to four times higher in that community than in other areas of the Bay Area. Now, this is something that through our CARE program, we've understood and we've actually started to show ourselves. And indeed, the CARE program, the Community at Risk Evaluation Program, is one in which we've identified this same type of issue, if you will, where you have elevated levels of diesel particulate in a community. We think that occurs in about six communities in and around the Bay Area. And that actually has been released to the public through our CARE program and through our call for projects for the Carl Moyer program. What we've done as a staff is said, we have these six communities. If you'll notice, they're listed, they're kind of highlighted here on this little map of the slide. And we've been specifically working very diligently to get people signed up so that we can get traps on trucks, we can get traps on harbor craft and railroads in around these communities. And I would tell you that the six communities include Concord, Richmond, West Oakland, East San Francisco, and I want to call it Central San Jose. It's where the confluence of the 680 and the 101 come together. There's not only stationary sources there, of course, but there's a lot of freeway and a lot of truck traffic right there. So,
is that Supervisor Yeager's district?
I didn't superimpose anybody's political jurisdiction on this, but we as staff are just telling you what you see in these areas. We believe you see elevated levels of diesel particulate. You have elevated risks. The first HRA from CARB, at least, is showing that it's about three to four times higher in terms of the cancer risk in that West Oakland community. And we think, frankly, that's also, if you were to do a similar type of effort in these other five regions, you'd see similar elevated risk levels. This is actually an extremely important finding. It means that we need to continue to target our funds. It means we need to work with the communities. I will tell you, though, specifically that the risk, 80%+ of the risk is due to diesel particulate, which is what we've been continuing to try to tell the community groups, that what we need to do is redouble and focus our efforts to clean up the diesel particulate, which is why you don't see the staff necessarily agreeing with the community groups that we need to not allow any stationary sources in these areas, but rather deal with what we believe is the much larger issue, which is diesel particulate in these six communities.
And it's related not as much to the port as it is from the freeway. I mean, it's like 80% or 90% is coming from the freeway and only.
Right, I wanted to highlight that for you. When you take a look at the risk about, as the chairman has indicated, most of the risk is due to truck traffic. Much of the risk is due to just trucks traversing the area. It isn't necessarily due to trucks in and around the port. That's actually an interesting finding because the port does clearly contribute to this area, both in ship and truck and train traffic. But there's just also a lot of truck traffic in and around the West Oakland community.
But in the numbers, it really is lower for the port and the UP rail yard. It's 90% from the freeway.
It does validate, though, the fact that we're trying to get trucks retrofitted and really working hard to try to get
it. And I think the one good thing that will come out of the meeting tonight that and this is the which will come from the as a result of the discussion and the good news hopefully at the end of the meeting is that by 2010 you see CARB this summer will be hopefully adopting an on-road diesel rule similar to the last year's rule, which was the off-road diesel rule, which is very stringent and will have major effect on every diesel truck in the country, in the state. And by 2010, there should be a 40% reduction of that diesel particulate. By 2015, an 80% reduction if everything goes as planned.
If they comply.
If they'll have to comply. But if that moves forward. So that's kind of the silver lining at the end. And then by 2020, there'll be a 75% reduction. It'll actually come down because there'll be increased truck traffic in that area. So it'll make a big difference, I think.
My last slide, Mr. Chairman, is just a listing of all the things we're doing. You'll see here that we're participating quite extensively in the HRA. We actually co-chair the plan development for the port. In fact, the port just yesterday adopted an important policy statement that calls for an 85% reduction of their port-related emissions. And we testified, I testified actually in support of that effort. And so they're moving forward. They're going to be looking at container fees, truck fees, and there's a whole host of issues that we're quite a bit engaged in with the port. And we're planning to bring that back for the Ad Hoc Ports Committee. We actually are tracking, and actually we're conducting some truck work to try to refine the truck estimates in the West Oakland community. And then finally, through the CARE program, there's a variety of efforts we have underway, including targeting our grant funds. With that, Mr. Chairman, that concludes my brief talk on this part.
We have some questions, Jack. So, Vice Chair Torriette.
Jack, when they looked at the cancer risk, are they looking at people just living in the area, or did they look at people that are working in the area and evaluating who is getting?
The cancer risk is expressed in a 70-year lifetime exposure. So typically what you're talking about is looking at the residents, of course, in the area. But indeed, the maximally individually exposed person oftentimes can be right there on port property, so you're impacting the workers clearly. But what's somewhat unique to West Oakland as compared to like LA or Long Beach, there's the residents are very close to the port actually over there. And so that's, I think, the very significant part of it is the fact that you see elevated levels of diesel particulate, and it translates into an elevated risk in the residents of the West Oakland.
Okay. So the study was really focused on the actual residents mm-hmm. as opposed to the actual people that may be working there, and it could potentially be even more if
Well, the relative risk numbers are expressed, just as I mentioned, about three or four times higher. I can give you exact numbers, but just in partnership with our state organization, CARB, they've asked us to hold off on getting too much detail on it because it's going to be talked about tonight. But we do see that the increased risk is about three to four times higher than you would see in some place that doesn't have all that truck traffic.
But isn't that risk related to, isn't it expressed as parts, I mean, risk per million,
right,
so
it's in
it would be would it be a million residents or just a million population that would be there, whether it's resident or not?
If you take a look at just average in the Bay Area in some place that doesn't have a lot of truck or ship or train traffic, you start to see a risk that's anywhere between 300 to 400 and a million. That's just all the different sources contributing to it. In this particular community, it's three to four times that kind of number. So it's the risk of contracting cancer in a million people. That's the best way to think about it. So it's on the order of about 1,200 in terms of a risk. And that's a very significant finding, actually, much higher than I think most professionals thought it was going to be. And it just means that we need to focus and concentrate our efforts in that community.
And then a follow-up question. I'm not familiar how a diesel truck goes through any type of when we get our cars registered, we go through smog check. But is there any type of check that the diesel vehicles go through to evaluate how bad they're polluting or not?
There's at the way stations, there are typically opacity reviews, meaning is it smoking, but that's really not necessarily an emission standard that they're implementing. They're just seeing if the truck is operated properly, is it running properly to be operated on the road. It isn't an emissions test, so that really doesn't exist right now in terms
and
of.
And there really hasn't been an emissions standard for diesel, so that's this new one, the one that we.
That's just only for new vehicles starting
new vehicles,
in 2007.
The one that was applied last year, and the drayage truck rule. It was, most of the drayage trucks were 1970s, 80s, and vintage, and early 90s, and so those are had no restrictions and no emission controls on them. So that's why this is such a major rules and.
To
requirements in the future.
To roll it forward, but isn't...
And an expensive one, unfortunately, for the...
I mean, after a truck is running, even though they may be newer vehicles, is it like a wood smoke? is it like one of the stoves where if you continue to run it and you don't maintain it, you may have additional particulate... That builds up or is emitted.
Actually, CARB and the EPA established standards so that if a new truck purchased of 2007 or beyond is actually has a retrofit device built into it. So it's OEM device, they call it. But trucks, unfortunately, last 20, 30 years. That's the problem with diesel trucks or diesel engines in general. They're great. They're very reliable and durable. The problem is that they can basically spew out diesel particulate for a very long period of time. So this risk here in this community really is driven heavily by the trucks, and so we're going to need to figure out how to get them retrofitted. And then, as the chairman indicated, so many of them are old that we really, the best strategy is to replace them. Let's really take a 1979 truck and replace it with an early 90s, or late 90s, I should say, an early 2000 type of truck. That alone actually reduces the diesel particulate considerably, just because it's a better engine. It's oftentimes an electronically driven,
And there will also be the new Carl Moyer program, or at least the changes to it, will allow for more.
That's correct.
For replacement of engines and trucks that really before retrofit was only the only requirement. So now. Director Wagon, can I?
Are we looking at any other stationary source? Any other stationary sources coming into this area? Because the community is still going to be very concerned about about cumulative effect.
Right. And I don't want you to take my remarks to mean that we don't think that there's a valid concern over the cumulative impacts in these particular areas. It's just that the relative contribution of stationary sources are small. So. And the answer to your question, Director Wagenknecht, is yes, there are new or modified stationary sources coming into these communities all the time. Up in Richmond, for example, Chevron's going through, I don't want to call it an expansion, but a significant change to their operations over in Richmond. And that's caused a lot of controversy because there's a slight increase in VOC from that facility. So they do occur. It's an ongoing effort. Our permitting division, our engineering division is quite busy, and there are stationary sources going into those communities.
Well, still we remain cognizant of the cumulative impacts.
Right. I think we need to continue to work with the community's representatives to understand how we can best address their concerns. What they would like to see us do is essentially have all that cumulative risk identified, and there have been proposals to suggest that we don't have any more permitting of stationary sources in these communities, and I don't know if we necessarily can go there. I think legally we have some constraints, and then technically and from a policy standpoint, we've communicated to them, and I'm telling you today, we don't know if that necessarily makes sense either.
Moratoriums often aren't the right answer, so.
Right, Director Hagerty?
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that Supervisor Miley's been contacted personally. Because sometimes, you know, these things kind of fall through the cracks in our offices. So, but if you could just have somebody call him and make sure that he's aware of the meeting tonight, he may already be, or just be helpful.
Director Silver?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess this is a project the CARB should take on heavily, because when we came out with car air emission regulations many years ago, there were several of us that complained that it didn't take in the air emissions by diesel engines. And the statement was, well, diesel emissions are heavy, they stay low to the ground, they don't go to the atmosphere, so they don't hurt anything. Well, drive to the Sierras in the winter and the snowbanks are black and the trees along the freeway die. And the problem, it's on the news every day, the vehicles that are causing the problems are the ones that are poorly maintained. And we need a way to inspect those to get them off the road, just like we do with anybody else's car. And this issue here is killing people. And, you know, if we'd acted on it many years ago, when many of us, you know, raised Cain about it, and were just told, you know, don't worry about it, don't worry about it. And I don't want to be told not to worry about it anymore. And I think you have to get into the inspections of these vehicles. The truck inspection facilities, they just make sure you're safe and your muffler exhaust system is intact. That's it. They don't look at air emissions, and it's too important to gloss over. And we have in our county just rows and rows every day, 24 hours a day, of truck traffic coming out of San Joaquin Valley and down off of 80 and going through the county. And you can watch them. You can see some of them come down, look like the old train steam engines coming down the freeway. Now, that stuff is harmful.
It is harmful.
Just wanted to speak my piece. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Silva, for that piece. Director Niss.
There it is. I guess the part of this that concerns me is if we're calling this a health risk assessment, it's, and it plays into what John just said, who is responsible at the end of the day? So we've called out a health risk assessment that seems to be rather excessive. So now what? What are the next steps then? And where do we actually see this going? We're saying you live in a really high-risk area. We're very concerned about that. So who will be there tonight that's going to say, we're going to take responsibility for this?
Director Niss, I would tell you that you'll have representatives, of course, of this organization plus the state, all letting this community know that there is an elevated health risk. I think most folks in the West Oakland community are going to say, duh, actually. Yeah. I think, honestly, they'll tell you that. I'll say, yeah, okay, we know.
Right.
What are you doing about it, which is
yeah,
what your point
exactly.
is. And so we're there to tell them that we're targeting our monies, that we've got a Green Ports Initiative underway, and we've got, we think, actually, not only our Carl Morrow monies, by the way, is that we're going to try to target our infrastructure bond monies as well. So that's as much as $35 million that's going to be being brought through this organization to try to deal with this. Now, that's not going to go far enough, clearly. This is something that we have to undertake and will be implementing over many, many years. As the chair indicated, CARB also has a series of regulations that are being implemented. They include a private fleet rule, private truck fleet rule. They have a shoreside power rule they've already adopted, and just a variety of other things that over time will actually bring this health risk down. But we as an organization have to be a part of that whole solution to target our monies and actually then assure the public that indeed these reductions will take place. So I guess the short answer to your question is it's a multi-agency approach. It's going to be ourselves as well as the state saying that we are working to try to address this. I'm sure the point back to us tonight is going to be you got to do it quicker. You got to be more expeditious. This is a significant health risk, and district, you got to do more. I'm sure that's going to be the point that we'll hear tonight.
I think it will be. Now you have down as your third point the liaison with the local health departments.
Yes.
And so, what will they see their role as being?
They're there and actually have been participating quite a bit. This is the Alameda County Health Department, Dr. Iton and Pam Evans and others. I think are very much understanding that the air pollution contributes to already a stressed health situation in West Oakland. We see elevated asthma rates, for example, in West Oakland. We see higher hospitalization rates in this community. And you can't necessarily just relate that to air pollution, but clearly the health department comes to the table to say that there's a variety of things you can do to make sure that you are protecting yourself. That and they lend their support to frankly try to make sure that we're moving as expeditiously as possible.
I think it's so important. It's just what John said. You know, if it kills the trees and so forth, it can't do much for kids who are breathing it or adults either. And again, you know, I'm surprised we don't have a number of people here speaking this morning about the usual risk that are associated.
You will
with
hear
that.
It probably your next board meeting.
But I think it's one of the areas that you're addressing by talking about how, first of all, you acknowledge the problem, which is important. Secondly, working with CARB. But I think thirdly, that liaison with the local health departments is really important. Mm-hmm. So I am going to presume they will be there tonight as well. Mm-hmm. This sounds like it'll be a very lively meeting. Are you
very
going to be
so.
There, Jerry?
Yeah.
Yes, I will be.
Thanks.
And just to give you a couple of indications, and that's why the numbers that I gave that will be released tonight in terms of the reduction by 2010, that we have 40% reduction of what we're talking about already. So there'll be some rapid, and in the port, you know, they the rules that CARB adopted last year, the hoteling of the ships that no longer can sit there and do their, run their auxiliary diesel engines, and the drayage truck rule, all the drayage trucks have to be updated to new engines. So it's going to happen pretty fast.
But the 90% of that indicates that it comes from the diesel trucks is really alarming.
And that's the rule that will, that CARB will be dealing with in a couple of months so in August. So it should help it. Director Ross.
I just wanted to, Jack answered through most of the conversation or most of the questions I had as to how we'll dovetail our efforts with Port's efforts of yesterday and CARB's efforts. So you pretty much answered that. But I just want to, I guess I'll take the opportunity to thank staff for being a driving force. The Port has been acting here in the last year or so at the, because our staff has been on them and has said we're going to do something if you don't, at CARB as well. So I think that that has to be recognized, and it's good to see. When I saw them, the news last night, I saw what they did, I go, I didn't think it was upon their own whole volition. I'm glad they're doing it. But I'm glad they, our staff is there behind it, giving support, and look forward to what our solution as a partnership is going to be.
Director Kishimoto.
Thank you. So these are very serious findings, and my question is, I mean, does this new data have any new implications for land use and residents and schools near highways?
Yes, Director Kishimoto, I would tell you that we note there on the last bullet for the 1, 2, 3, 4th bullet down, land use guidance, we think part of our solution has to be how do we make sure that this doesn't persist or get worse? So we think the best solution there is to provide guidance to cities and counties not to locate sensitive receptors to these sources, like daycares, like long-term health facilities for seniors, things like that.
But do you think you can say almost the same thing, that people who live within 500 feet of a highway would have 3 to 4 times the cancer risk?
That's a
fairly dramatic statement to make.
Right. It is, and that's what you'll probably read tomorrow.
But, you don't think that's true for the 500 feet within highways?
Well, it depends on the truck amount of truck traffic and amount of, like for example, if you live within 500 feet at 580, you won't see that because that trucks are prohibited from that. Mm-hmm. But you do see a different profile of emissions, right? So it really kind of depends on the freeway itself and just how much trucks traverse it. I'll tell you, in the Bay Area, the 80 freeway up and down the East Bay is heavily traversed by trucks, and that's why you see those impacted communities. Mm-hmm. So it's not as much on the peninsula on 101. Mm-hmm. They typically use the East Bay side.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure people will be asking questions about which highways are the worst, too. And because, I mean, once you start talking about the 3 to 4 times the cancer risk. And then just out of curiosity, is it lung cancer or what is the cancer?
It's all cancers.
All cancers, mm-hmm. Really.
Director Alcomo.
Just a couple observations, first of which is it's obvious that we need to be working with the Truckers Association. They may not welcome us exactly, but by the same token, I think it's important. I think it's important that we do, because the writing is on the wall. There is a light at the end of the tunnel, and we should make every effort. And I'm sure they've got their lobbyists going full tilt. But the reality is, I think there is a light at the end of the tunnel, and as far as they're concerned, it's an oncoming train. So we need to concentrate on that. The most emotional part of this issue at the Port seems to be in the coverage, seems to be the TV coverage of independent truckers.
Right.
That is covered a great deal. I've actually been, I've spoken to a lot of people who are very concerned that a lot of these truckers who have saved a long period of time, they finally get a truck. They're hardworking, good folks trying to support their families. And they're sitting in the lines, burning up diesel, but they're trying hard to be good citizens, and made the capital investment, and they pay their taxes, and they sit there for 3 and 4 hours. I don't know how we get to them. Is there a way? I mean, they're not going to look at us like a friend. So how do we get to them to actually talk about truck replacement? Do we go stand in the line?
Right.
And have we come up with some ideas about that that would help us explain to people what's going on? We have a lot of truckers in Contra Costa County, and the big ones in particular have expressed concern about running the little ones out of business, and that they're a very important component of our economy. So I don't know how to put all that together.
No, Director Holcomb, if I can, I would tell you that is the central issue with West Oakland, by the way. And it was raised in a considerable amount of discussion last night in front of the Port Commission. The issue has to do with the fact that the Port of Oakland is serviced primarily by independent truckers, and each individual owns and operates their own truck. And there's very few trucking companies. And the concern we have as district staff is that the current system doesn't lend itself for us to be able to provide monies to them to clean up those trucks. The current system, for lack of a better word, is a little bit broken, frankly, because it's much easier to talk to a trucking firm that operates 20, 30, 50 trucks and get them actually retrofitted or replaced. And these independent truckers, we're basically communicated to the port that we have to talk about how do you change that. So unfortunately, what's happening is it's getting broiled into this whole system of a concession model or some other approach where the port basically only allows for companies to be servicing the port. I can tell you as staff, we're very sensitive to not getting involved in this issue. So I want to tell the chair and the board here very clearly, as staff, we have said we're not going to tell you how you operate. What we're going to tell you is this money's available. You need to address this. There's not an easy mechanism for us to provide monies to these trucking firms or these truckers. And port, you need to figure this out, because we're not, as staff or district, going to tell you how to operate. But you need to figure this type of system out. So a lot of different approaches are being discussed.
Can we work with some people to try to get that straightened out so that independent truckers can apply?
We can, and we will. I'll just tell you that so far our success to date has been on the side where you do have firms. And we're going to need to spend some of our money here in the next year through the Mobile Source Committee. I will tell you probably trucking firms are going to be the ones availing themselves of the monies that do. So because there
that.
Are some, but
I
and the
know
independent
that.
Truckers.
That's why I'm trying to bring this up now.
Right. And the independent truckers issue is going to be worked through, and solutions are going to be developed and implemented by the port. That I would tell you probably won't be until next year before we start getting the independent truckers.
I'm trying to raise this issue because I think it's a big issue. They're not organized. Right. They are afraid that they're going to get targeted, I'm sure. And so if they would try to visit or explain their plight, that they don't have an independent contractor or truck contractors organization. They don't have power.
But
in many ways. On the other hand, they are being responsible citizens that provide a needed service, and I don't know how to get out of this mess. Maybe CARB can help us.
I think CARB can't necessarily either tell the port that they have to have trucking firms. But I'll tell you, the truckers last night, there's a lot of discussion about them organizing.
Yeah, they're going to organize.
And I'm trying to make sure we keep
I don't want to get
are,
into that part of it, but I want to raise the issue. Right. And if CARB can do something, then do it. I think that is an important component of this thing. And I do think we'd have compliance if there were a clear path that we could show them how they may be assisted.
Thank you, Director Holcomb. Director Smith?
Maybe I don't even need to ask the question or make the statement, but it seems to me that if you, and I appreciate what Supervisor Holcomb was talking about with independent truckers and having their life savings tied up in a truck, and in many cases that's true. On the other hand, I don't know that being cautious, I mean, I understand that in relationship with the port, and I actually like the approach saying, here's the limit, you guys figure out how you're going to do it. On the other hand, it seems to me we've got some responsibility as an air board to really press on about not waiting around for 30 years to get these trucks off the road.
Right.
Because frankly, I don't know how, given that these aren't localized trucks, and we do have now what's been a long-awaited health assessment risk, and as
Supervisor Silva said, these things, these trucks are, with all the good intentions, are killing people. We got to get them off the road. And I think that maybe some kind of legislative effort, I mean, I don't mean to be necessarily confrontational with people who have their life savings tied up on their trucks. On the other hand, it does give them a right to drive around in some vehicle that's directly impacting people's health. And I think this health assessment is something that we need to be, when it comes out, we're obviously going to have to spend a great deal of time on how we're going to express what this Air Board's position is, because I think as soon as you start out, we're going to be sort of locked into a particular strategy. And I'd feel a lot better if we could say we're going to, you know, work on your behalf as hard as we possibly can to make sure that this risk is going to be reduced or eliminated. Because I think that there's not enough money that we're ever going to generate through TSCA, Carl Moyer, or anything else that's going to take care of this problem. So I see at the end game, we can do as much as we can to support. On the other hand, there's going to be where, pardon the pun, the rubber meets the road, is going to be on the regulatory side through some legislative effort to draw a line in the sand and say, at such and such time, get these babies off the road. And the other part, we've got a little sidebar with the Director Torliat, which is, I can't believe there isn't testing for particulate matter, especially now that you've got hard evidence, that the onus needs to go on people. If you're going to make a living, you're going to have to, the cost of products may well go up, but what's the cost of somebody's life as opposed to a ton of, you know, cargo? And I think it's an intriguing question, one that I hope that we'll spend some time figuring out a real good long-term strategy about how you're going to approach this thing.
Very good. Thank you, Director Smith. Thank you for your patience, Director Lockhart.
Yes. Well, I just want to comment on something that Director Kishimoto brought up, and I think it's a real frustration among cities, is that HCD and ABAG, and we get these RENA numbers, and we're talking about housing, and it has to be dense, and it has to be transit-oriented development. So what are we doing? We're going out of our way on one track to build housing next to freeways, to build housing next to mass transit, and we're putting them denser and more people in those facilities. And we're being rewarded for doing it. We're being told this is how you meet your RENA numbers. This is what you need to do. If you have mass transit in your community, then you need to locate housing right on top of it. And then on the other hand, we're being told, oh, by the way, we're killing people that live next to the freeway. And it's a true frustration, especially for communities that have to plan for both. And somehow this discussion and the discussion about housing is not connecting. There is no connection. And so we're going down these parallel paths. While we're trying to help people, we're hurting people. And it's a real frustration, I know, on cities' parts, because the housing numbers aren't backing off. We're being told we have to build the housing. We're being told we're going to lose transportation dollars if we don't build the housing. And so we're looking at where to build it. We're getting help if we build it here. And yet we're not doing the right thing. So, and 20 years from now, we're going to be talking to everybody that lives in the transit-oriented development about why they have cancer. So it's like we're building our own problem, and I don't know how to get the two different sides talking to each other about housing and transportation, but we need to do something, and maybe reports like this will help start that dialogue.
I think some of the argument on the other side of that is the issue of, as I mentioned, by 2015, 80% of that risk will be eliminated based on proposed regulations and changes that we'll do, and so that hopefully will mitigate some of that impact.
So TODs will not be dangerous to live.
Well, yeah, they'll be 80% less dangerous than they are today, I guess, is the thing. Director Silva.
Oh, sorry. No.
No? Okay. Wonderful. Thank you. Jack,
yes.
Good discussion.
Mr. Chairman, I just have one last item. We have an Air and Waste Management Conference, annual conference in Portland this year in the days of June 24th through the 26th. We would ask if we can have the board members who are have some interest in to let us know by April 1st.
Oh, thanks for the warning.
Hey, well, hey. If you want to attend so we can register, you get the free.
I'm sorry, what are the dates again?
The dates are June 24th through the 26th.
What, June
third
24th?
Week, third week in June. It's in Portland.
You get a brochure, right?
You can take a train with a nice clean diesel particulate filter on it up to Portland. And if you can let us all know, though, by April 1st, I would like to, so we can get the registration done and all the accommodations made.
Great. That's, thank you, Jack. And I have no report. Any board member comments today?
I have.
Yes, Director Szymanski.
I have
one comment. And we, our town had a study session yesterday, and I was talking about, you know, wood smoke and eliminating wood smoke and so on. We are seriously looking at an ordinance to waive permits for putting in gas lines. And that might be something that other cities and counties may want to look at, is waiving the permit fee to put it in. It's not a lot, but it's something.
That's a great idea. Thank you. Director Kishimoto.
Do they still need a permit, though?
Thank you. Well, this is actually a question and comment about agenda noticing. And, you know, things like these that we get, you know, even as a board member, I didn't really know what was going to be presented today. And I imagine that's true for members of the public as well. And I know there's going to be, there's a new law regarding the Brown Act, which is going to be kicking in sometime, which to let the public know what's going to be presented at these board meetings. So is it possible to let people know that these are going to be presented?
You're saying to add that to the
add that topic as a subtopic, or, you know, make sure that at least these are posted on the website as soon as we get it.
Those items that would be in the APCO's report.
Things which are presented at places that people should know that they're going to be presented.
I would agree with you that we'd like to be able to do that, but we actually only received the HRA yesterday. Yeah, that's in part what.
So are these posted on the web right now?
These are not. No.
These are public information. This is public information, right? Yeah.
Well, now it is. Certainly.
Yeah. So it would just seem that, you know, we post them as soon as at least the first board member knows about them. It seemed to me.
Director Bates.
Yes. Just a brief comment. I appreciated the discussion that took place, but you know, about half of it I couldn't hear. We either have to turn up the volume, or I have to get a better hearing aid, or both. But because it would be helpful, I could only hear. Several people, that I couldn't actually hear you, and I couldn't hear Mark, I couldn't hear Scott. So we heard Jack about half the time.
Sometimes that's a good thing.
I would ask that, you know, ADA requirements, that we either have somebody come along and, you know, and do his captions, or
does it help if we do this? Because I was speaking into the mic. Does that help?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Yeah, maybe everyone needs
Silva,
to.
I can hear him.
I think that we just have to speak
into
the mic.
Turn it on and speak into the mic is what works, I think.
Good suggestion. Thank you.
So I'm going to start raising my hand. When people I can't hear, I'm going to start raising my hand.
That'll work well. That's a good idea.
I do want
Thank
to
you.
Tell you. Tells me, I can't hear you.
Is there no other comments? The next meeting is Wednesday, April 2nd, 9:45, right in this location. Thank you all for being here. The meeting's adjourned.
I'm just going, of course. I won't be there. I won't be there.